Can you just explain how you spent your first morning?
Sure. My first morning, about 4:30 in the morning, I was driven in a van to a construction site where seven of us scaled a crane and dropped a banner asking President Obama and 17 world leaders to take a strong stance on global warming and craft a deal in Copenhagen this year that will actually protect the world's species and communities.
It's not the usual first day at the office, really, is it?
No, but it's a fairly typical day at Greenpeace, actually.
I can imagine. And you were arrested, is that right?
That's true.
And charged with?
Trespass.
Now, I mean, obviously for Greenpeace, this is a very interesting moment. I mean, you've got a new president who has promised to be much more active on the environment than his predecessor. I mean, what do you think of him so far?
Well, I think so far he's done only okay. I mean, I think George Bush was very active on the environment. He actively fought to repeal all sorts of laws, and he actively fought to weaken clean air standards. But President Obama has been fairly active. But what we haven't seen is a real leadership role in telling the U.S. Congress that he wants real action on global warming. He's essentially sat on the sidelines and hidden behind Congress while coal companies and the politicians that they fund have worked to really weaken clean energy and global warming standards in the United States.
So what are the things you'd like to have seen him do more on?
We would love him to step up and say how many green jobs he actually wants to create. And he should step up and say that what he needs is 25% or 40% clean energy by 2025. We would want him to say that he wants pollution cut by 40% by 2020. The pollution that causes global warming that comes from burning coal and oil and natural gas. And so far, he's really just sat on the sideline and let the House and the Senate negotiate with coal companies and the polluters that don't want anything to happen.
I mean, are you worried that he is sort of not being as strong with special interests as you'd hoped?
Absolutely. He has really, on a few occasions, not lived up to his promise, I think. I think that, in general, President Obama has a lot of integrity and generally stands for what's right and says he will stand up to special interests. And at the same time, just recently, his Environmental Protection Agency was deciding whether or not to protect polar bears from global warming. And even though the science says that U.S. polar bears could be extinct by 2050 because of global warming, he refused to actually regulate global warming pollution to protect the polar bear.
And what about car manufacturers, his dealings with car manufacturers?
I think he has spent more time focusing on protecting those jobs, which I think is really crucial. I think the big problem is you've had people like Representative Dingell in Congress who've protected U.S. car makers so much from the actual market forces out there that he's created tax incentives for Hummers and not hybrids. And that kind of protection from Congress has protected our car companies from needing to compete well, and that's ultimately why we're seeing them go down the tubes. And so I think what President Obama can do when he has leverage and is saying, I can give you this money to keep you afloat, is also say, but it's only if we have 100% plug-in hybrids by 2015. Mm. And we haven't seen that kind of leadership yet. The hope is he'll take advantage of this moment and do that.
Coal is a hot potato in American politics, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is in global politics.
Yeah. And but in the States, I mean, Greenpeace obviously campaigns very heavily on the issue of mountaintop removal. Are you seeing any budging from the government on that issue?
We have not seen President Obama step up to lead on that issue either.
Can you just explain for people in the UK what mountaintop removal means?
Yes, in West Virginia, in some of our most beautiful wild lands in the United States, coal companies, actually this process was started by the federal government, are literally blowing off the top of mountains, just raising mountains and turning them into plateaus to get the coal, and it's just cheaper to do it that way rather than mine. And so there are hundreds of mountains throughout West Virginia and the Appalachian Mountains where the tops are just gone, and all the chemicals and debris and pollution runs down into the streams, causes floods in people's homes, and it's just ruining communities and people's health and permanently scarring our land.
It seems extraordinary there should be so little protection for the landscape.
Yeah, it's really outrageous, and I think it just shows you how far we've gone away from our values to continue to feed our addiction for fossil fuels. We can produce electricity with wind, with solar. We can cut back electricity with energy efficiency. But instead of that, the U.S. goes to war for oil, or we blow up our precious mountains for coal. And it just shows how much power these companies have over our politicians. And it's time that people in the U.S. stand up and say, no war in our name for oil. and don't destroy our mountains. This is our land. We need to shift to clean energy.
How do you think that the power of, that those special interests operate? I mean, are you saying there's actual corruption, or do you think that it's just that the sort of senators are lent on heavily by the interests in their state?
Yeah, I think it's largely the latter. I mean, there's always some corruption, of course, but energy companies this year spent $80 million in the first quarter lobbying in the United States. And so there's just tens of millions of dollars going into political campaigns to fund politicians and into lobbying efforts to make sure that politicians cave to their interests. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for the average Joe to stand up. And so that's why Greenpeace works with people all over the country to bring people together to counteract that kind of money power that companies have over our politicians.
But you have had a big step forward recently because John Wellinghoff, the chairman of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, said that he thought no new nuclear power stations or coal power stations would be necessary. Is that right?
Yeah, that is a big victory. They especially came out saying that we don't need new nuclear energy to meet our needs in the United States. And it's a little bit of a no-brainer. The nuclear industry, it's probably the most expensive way that you can boil water to create steam, to create electricity. It's not safe because of terrorism. It's really expensive. It wouldn't work if it wasn't extremely subsidized, and it's just not the way forward, especially when we have clean energy like solar and wind.
Do you think, though, that I mean, Greenpeace has a history of opposing nuclear proliferation. Mm-hmm. Do you think that that makes it harder for your organization to consider nuclear power?
Yes, if you don't want nuclear proliferation, you don't want nuclear energy. Absolutely.
But I mean, do you think there might be advantages to nuclear energy that Greenpeace overlooks because it's preoccupied with the, you know, the sort of weaponry end of things?
Yeah, that's like saying that your boyfriend's really nice, but he only hits you once in a while, but the other times it's great. I mean, or it's like saying your boyfriend's nice once in a great while, but he hits you almost all the time. I mean, if you think about it, nuclear energy, when Mohammed Atta, who flew one of the planes into the World Trade Center, was practicing his flights. He flew over a nuclear plant an hour outside of New York City, and he wired back, why don't we hit this? And the message he got in return was not yet.
Oh, God.
Yeah, nuclear power plants are sitting ducks for terrorists. The more that we're sending nuclear power plants overseas, the more we're enabling other countries to have nuclear weapons, because you can produce materials that you need for nuclear weapons with any nuclear plant. We don't know what to do with the waste. We still have no idea how to manage that. And we don't need it, and it's really expensive. And so there are all these reasons. So once in a while...
It's just that a lot of environmentalists are slowly coming... I mean, not a lot, but there are certain significant environmentalists who are, you know, prepared to be much more agnostic on the issue of nuclear power now. I mean, how do you regard that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that some groups out there are saying, oh my gosh, if we don't cut global warming pollution, we could lose 70% of our species this century or within the next 100 years. And so people are willing to make some really big sacrifices and compromises in order to get to that pollution reduction. Based on what we've seen from the top engineers worldwide, including the NASA of Germany that we did a study with on how we can get to clean energy without nuclear and solve global warming, we don't need to create new problems while solving the problem of global warming. And so some other people are saying, well, if we have to cave or if we have to make a deal with the nuclear industry when it comes down to the deal-making in Congress, we're willing to, but we just don't think that we could feel good if we ended one catastrophe like global warming, but then we're part of the cause of nuclear proliferation or war or some other problem like that.
Going back to your own background, which is, I mean, you founded the Power Shift organization, which was focused on clean energy.
Right.
And then you were the grassroots director for Greenpeace for 6 years. So your background is very much in movement building and organizing. I mean, do you think that you're ready to take on the tradition of within Greenpeace of direct action?
I think my first day was a good example. I think. So climbing that crane and dropping that banner, where Greenpeace is completely committed to direct action. But our role isn't just direct action. Greenpeace's role is to say, what does the science say we need to do to stop these huge problems with the environment? And how do we get there? And how do we, rather than starting from where some other groups start, which is, what can we win in Congress, which is already owned by the nuclear and coal industries? We start with, what do we have to win to save the planet? And then we do what it takes in a peaceful way to win. Sometimes that's just drawing the moral line, like Gandhi or Martin Luther King Jr. did with direct action and civil disobedience. Sometimes it's releasing reports like we just did with Germany's NASA, saying here's how, from an engineering perspective, we can solve the problem and have clean energy and create more jobs. And sometimes it's working with Pepsi or Coke to get them to phase out their refrigerants that cause global warming. And so we work in a whole range of ways. And one of our tactics that we're known for is standing up and saying, this is wrong and this is right. But we also do quite a bit of other work to make sure that we're passing policies and changing corporate behavior so that we can protect the planet.
Are you going to come up with the kind of stunts that have made Greenpeace so famous in the first place? You know, putting your boats in front of whaler or, you know, sitting on oil spars.
Yeah, some people call them stunts. I think we call them stands. But it's just where we take a stand and say this is wrong, and where a person is willing to put themselves in between a grenade-tipped harpoon and a whale that it's about to explode. Then, yeah, well, you'll definitely continue to see that with Greenpeace. The issues that we're working on are just as morally important. And so we'll continue to take a principled stance where we say we refuse to allow a politician who gets their campaign contributions from coal to jeopardize 70% of the world's species.
I mean, I suppose what I'm trying to say is, I mean, Greenpeace is sort of has always throughout its history been in quite an interesting position, hasn't it? I mean, on one hand, a very radical sort of foot forward organization, right out there taking risks that other organizations wouldn't take. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, increasingly now working as a sort of a lobbying organization, a social movement, a network building. You have been accused by some other groups of kind of becoming sort of quite, you know, soft and central and, you know, going native and getting too comfortable with a sort of lobbying role. Do you think that's a danger?
I don't think so. All you need to do is spend a day on Capitol Hill like I did yesterday to realize how much power the coal companies have over our politicians, to realize that Greenpeace's role is to be mobilizing and inspiring action so that we can exert the kind of pressure from the outside that counteracts the coal and oil lobbies on the inside. I think you're cured of that the first day you start lobbying.
Out of interest, I mean, I don't know if you read about the recent action some activists took in Norway where they scuttled the Skarbak, a Norwegian whaling ship. What did you think of that action?
Was that the just some independent activist responding to Sea Shepherd's claims? Yeah, Greenpeace doesn't support damaging property and definitely doesn't support harming people. And so we generally don't support that. We don't work with groups that do that. We focus a lot more on how we can communicate a message that's really clear, that gets everybody on our side, instead of going out there and doing something that could hurt somebody or damage someone's property and divide people even more over tactics rather than focus people on the fact that we have some serious problems on our hands.
So you're looking forward to going forward under Obama. You had a pretty rough time with George W. Bush, didn't you?
Yeah, George W. Bush was a big friend of oil, and he did a lot.
Loved it.
Yeah, he was willing to have thousands of Americans die for it and hundreds of thousands of Iraqis, and I think that President Obama is not nearly as bad as President Bush was. The question is, how good will President Obama be? And that's our big challenge.
And, of course, you had a couple of confrontations with the Bush administration as well when they tried to sue Greenpeace, prosecute Greenpeace, didn't they?
Yes, Greenpeace is officially sailor mongers. When about 80% of the illegal mahogany logged in the Amazon was being shipped to the United States, Greenpeace continuously told President Bush that we needed to stop it. When he did nothing, we boarded a ship with permission from the ship and dropped a banner from it saying, President Bush, stop illegal logging. And that ship was coming into the port of Miami with illegal logs from the Amazon. Instead of prosecuting the illegal loggers, President Bush and John Ashcroft sued Greenpeace for being sailor mongers, which is a 1872 law passed to stop prostitutes from approaching ships as they dock and luring them into brothels.
Well, they must have dug that one out of a
they did
dusty
dig
chest.
It had never been used in over 100 years, that law, but they thought that it might be a way to take away our nonprofit status.
But they lost.
They lost. It turns out that we aren't sailor mongers, although we appreciate that title. And we won that case. But there were a few efforts where President Bush and the White House worked to take away our nonprofit status, either by sicking the Internal Revenue Service on us or accusing us of being prostitutes.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah, the IRS investigated all your books as well, didn't they?
That's right, yeah. ExxonMobil funded a front group which had, I think, about $124,000 in its budget, 120 of which came from Exxon. And that front group convinced the IRS and the White House that Greenpeace should be investigated by the IRS. And so we passed it with flying colors. They came in and pointed at us and said, "You'll never do a protest again." And then about a half a year later, they left and said, "Wow, your books are squeaky clean. Nice job."
Why do we need Greenpeace?
There is a huge need for somebody or some organization that will invite people in to influence governments, that will tell people the truth based on the science. What you hear from politicians is spin. What you hear from companies is greenwashing. And you're hearing them compromising because they can't just say, the science says that unless we cut pollution by 40%, we could lose 70% of the world's species. And there are few lone scientists out there who have the courage to stand up and say, here's the truth, and to scream from the rafters that it's an issue. And we work with all those scientists just to get the message out for them to say, if people don't rise up, we're in trouble. Congress is compromised by coal and oil interests. And Greenpeace is needed to mobilize people around the truth and around the science so that we can say, let's put politics aside and let's make this planet worth saving or worth living in for our kids.
And what makes you so sure that you have that truth?
Well, what we rely on is the science. So on global warming, for example, there's never been a bigger scientific consensus where 3,000 scientists from different governments get together every 5 years and say, here is the summary of all the peer-reviewed science. And what they tell us is that we need to cut our pollution by 40% by 2020. And if we don't do that, then we're at risk of losing 70% of the world's species, extreme sea level rise, and other huge problems, droughts, spreading diseases like malaria as warm areas spread. And so what we do is we say, what is the consensus of the best scientists and what's not getting out there? And how can we get that out there so that we can tell the public what the truth is and work with the public to pressure politicians and companies to do the right thing and to not listen to the fossil fuel interests that want us to stay in the past instead of move towards a clean energy future.
So that's what your focus for the year, next year, is?
Global warming and creating a new economy in the U.S. for green jobs and for green energy.